Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
That podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growling. Paul Danger Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you here on a delightful first day of fall. Thursday, Jay, happy fall to you.
Yeah, it feels great outside. I mean, yesterday was pretty brutal, and we saw Lou Anarumo came in from practice just dripping with sweat. I don't know how those guys – I think it was hotter than any day in training camp yesterday. So this really feels like football weather. Maybe this will be the kick in the pants the Bengals need to get the fall started and start winning some games.
I think a hoodie is my favorite, like, piece of clothing. Yeah. I love a good hoodie.
Like, pullover,
hoodie weather. Yeah, pull. I mean, it's right. They're probably right. Both right there. But like it's a weekend. It's a crisp Saturday at like 10:30 in the morning. There's like it's 62 degrees with a 9 mile per hour breeze, and you have that hoodie on. That is the perfect time and weather combination that I think that exists in my personal opinion.
I agree. I'm more the sunset, fall, cool, beer in hand, fire pit lit. That's my wheelhouse.
The problem is then you end up with a bunch of hoodies that smell like smoke.
I have a washing machine.
Yeah, but it's still, I feel like it gets into the thread. I'm sorry. We don't need it. People want to hear about the Bengals sadness. Maybe they don't. Maybe it'd be better if we just sat here and talked for 60 minutes about hoodies and fire pits, because I think that would probably put Bengals fans in a better place than they are if we talk about what's happening with the team right now. We won't do this. We're going to take you to the dark place. We're going to go deep into the dark place. But you know what? There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's the New York Jets. And so the chance for a win, and we will discuss the what if. What if, Jay? We will definitely go down the what-if path here later on. But Bengals are currently 0-2 facing the Jets on Sunday in New Jersey. So excited for that game. Zach Rosenblatt, who covers the Jets for us in New York, has joined Jay. That's up on YouTube. You can watch that individually if you want to go watch that on YouTube, of course, but you'll hear it here on the podcast as well. We're going to talk a little bit about the mood in the locker room, mellow moods. I used to love that. I used to listen to mellow moods on the Wiz. Like, maybe when I was like a teenager, listen to the Wiz at like midnight and they play mellow moods.
So I was far from mellow at midnight as a teenager.
I'm positive of that. So we're going to talk about the mood in the locker room. And then we're going to talk a little about the defense, since we spent all of the last podcast talking about the offense. We got one little tiny bit of defense into the last episode, and that, oddly enough, is something that Lou Anarumo went off on Wednesday with us. So we are going to bring you that audio because it's spectacular. So we've got that. And much more about the state of the defense as they get ready to face Joe Flacco and the New York Jets. Run passer boots, predictions, growler bets, all the things that you expect, Arby's, all the things that you expect of us here at our Thursday Hear That Podcast Growling will be delivered to you. Let's get it started, Jay. News that is popping off. Drew Sample, his injury is not good. Out several months, according to Zach Taylor, with a knee injury. Is it the season? Several months certainly suggests so. Maybe you get him back later in the year, but looks like could be lost for the year. Drew Sample potentially.
Curious. I mean, they haven't put him on IR yet. There's no urgency to do that. I was wondering if maybe they were waiting to see there. I mean, possibly they put in a waiver claim and they were waiting to see if they were going to win that waiver. Still people that may not know the waiver wire, even though they're 0-2, they are still next to last on the waiver wire until next week. It resets after week 3 to the current standings. So anybody they would try to claim on waivers, it would have to pass through 30 other teams. But yeah, there will be a Drew will go on IR at some point here, and there'll be a corresponding move, either an addition from somewhere else or a promotion from the practice squad.
Yeah, at this point, Devin Asiasi, who they picked up on waivers at the end of cutdown day from the New England Patriots, his role will, as Zach Taylor said, quote, bubble up here as they go. A big physical, probably more in the mold of Sample, the guy that can come in there, and Mitch Wilcox. I think they like Mitch Wilcox as the third guy, special teams guy, you know, backup long snapper. famously, but you know, who can be that third tight end if you need to call on him in that situation? I don't think they have a whole lot of interest in him becoming a bigger part of the offense. Maybe they do. Maybe we learn that. But I think finding out what Devin Asiasi can do as he's kind of getting over a little bit of an injury that he's had too, is going to be a big part of this. Lael Collins did not practice on Wednesday. Yes. Did not. We saw him in the locker room. Mm-hmm. But he did not end up on the practice field anywhere. No side field, no part of it. So off we go, right, Jay? It was listed with a back. It's the same thing that gave him troubles and kept him out during training camp. I guess we'll see how this develops as the week goes on, but not a good start.
No, and it is curious that he wasn't even out there. I mean, they talk all the time about mental reps, and Wednesday's the heavy day when you're installing a lot of the game plan, and I did find it curious that he wasn't even out there, even though he wasn't able to practice.
Well, Jay, when you've got someone that's just so mentally on top of every assignment at this point, you don't even need that. I mean, look, it's not like any air's happening out there. You can just go out there and strap it on and play.
Good point.
Yeah, good point. So we have that. Let's get into sort of, I think, topic one being discussed right now. Maybe more by us, but certainly was the popular topic of the day on this week, and understandably so. Team is 0-2. They were in the Super Bowl last year. They have lost to 2 backup quarterbacks. Their offense is, I'll say it politely, scuffling. There's a lot of people wondering what the hell is going on with this team. So what is the mood? You know, what is the mood? And we had a press conference with Joe Burrow that was in some ways very different than any that we've ever had with him, where he was very much, I felt like he was the therapist and Bengals fans were the patient, right? Yeah. It had everything except for the Aaron Rodgers voice saying R-E-L-A-X. He must have said, everybody relax, it's gonna be fine. I mean, if he said it 5 times, he said it 100. It felt like it was the clear repeated message was no panic here. You know, there's urgency. We need to go win. Nobody's trying to go 0-3, but relax, it's under control. Gonna go out and win, get back on the right track, and everything will be fine. Do you buy that?
I don't know if I buy that everything's going to be fine, but I buy I buy the fact that is the correct mindset right now. They've it's not just the math of 2 games down, 15 to go. It's the fact that, and Joe brought this up, they were in this spot a couple times last year where everybody was wondering what was going on. Can they get it turned on? Can they get it turned around? And they did. They didn't start great last year. They had to hit the 2-game losing streak heading into the bye. They come out of that with some real urgency and win that game in Vegas, and kind of they go back and lose 2 more in a row against the Chargers and the 49ers, and then the things really turned on. So the fact that there's a track record here, the fact that there is so much left to play, and this is a team that did play in the Super Bowl, had a very good offense last year. I buy into that fact that there's no reason to panic yet, but I don't think it's a lock. I don't think that it's automatic that this team's going to recapture that explosiveness or even just the efficiency of last year and be able to get back. The schedule's only going to get harder from here on out. So we'll see. I mean, it's the right tone, and it's not just Joe. It was every single person you talk to in that locker room, and they're still playing ping pong and they're still playing cards, and it felt like a 2-0 team instead of an 0-2 team in that locker room yesterday. So I think that's a good sign. You don't want the fractures and the panic and people buttoned up and not wanting to talk. Everybody was willing to talk and basically stay on the same message that it's urgent, but there's no reason to panic.
Yeah, I would say forward facing, at least in as much as we have been able to dig. Yeah, there is no fractures at all. I mean, there's none of that finger pointing or whatever. And, you know, these guys still continue to be really close. And that is the reason they have a belief that things will be fine. The leadership group and everybody that's kind of at helm and setting the culture and as good as they've been in sort of reacting to adversity is something they're leaning on right now and something they continue to bring up. And, you know, talking to DJ Reader, and he pointed out, look, you know, I started 0-3 in Houston and won 9 in a row. This type of stuff can happen and, you know, pointed out that it was very similar to the way it was last year. I mean, their one Jermaine Pratt crazy strip while the Vikings are getting ready to set up for a field goal away from being exactly in the same spot as last year of 0-2 with some uninspiring performances. And they turned that around with a nice week 3 and a Thursday night win against, the Jags. And so I think there's a lot of feeling of it'll be fine, but they do have a lot of work to do and to figure it out. The thing is, I mean, Jay, and I, as we know, we were talking before the show about what we're going to do. I was like, you've got the stats on this, right? I know you do. I mean, I know you've got, this is right in your wheelhouse. Is you got to play the game of what if, man? Like, what if they can't go into New York and beat Joe Flacco and the Jets? And they start 0-3 against Trubisky, Rush, and Flacco. I mean, the Trubisky, Rush, Flacco, Bermuda Triangle will go down in Bengals history as one of the most ridiculous stretches that you'll ever see, or confounding ones at least. And you're sitting at 0-3, and just the odds. People should know. A disclaimer. If you're on some kind of medication that doesn't help prevent you deal with hearing very negative things like this, just want to give you a warning. This is going to be some disarming stats that Jay's going to drop onto you. But 0-2, 0-3, what do we got, Jay?
So 0-2, where they're sitting right now, 428 teams in the Super Bowl era have started 0-2. Only 40 have rallied to make the playoffs.
Yikes.
9.3%. The last team to...
That's 0-2.
That's 0-2. The last team to not just make the playoffs but advance was the 2017 Saints. Von Bell and Trey Hendrickson, members of that team. Now you go to 0-3. There have been 250 teams that have started 0-3. 6 have made the playoffs.
Oh, man.
2.4%, and yes, you mentioned it, that the last team to do it was DJ Reader's Texans in 2018, and they very, very nearly went 0-4. After that 0-3 start, they won back-to-back overtime games, and that really propelled them into that 9-game winning streak. In addition to only 6 teams making the playoffs after an 0-3 start, only one ever has advanced in the playoffs, and that was the 1992 Chargers. So those are the long odds you're looking at if you go to New York and lose to Joe Flacco and the Jets.
And it's one, you know, ripping off 9 in a row is something, right? I mean, that's incredible. And the other thing is, it'd be ripping off 9 in a row against a series of very talented opponents. A lot of good teams on that list. It's one thing to go 0-3 if you were to play 3 of the best teams in the league and you just lost some tough games against some good teams and the schedule evens out or whatever. This is 3 backup quarterbacks. Okay. It's sound the alarm time. okay, and multiple alarms. We're in the like 3 to 4 alarm. What's the most alarms you can sound, Jay? Like what's the hot? I'm sure there's some firefighters that listen. Maybe this is at the firehouse right now. Your big HTPG people. You put it on and our voices echo through. You pause it when the bell rings. I want to know. Send us a message on Twitter. What's the most amount of alarms that can be rung? Because that whatever that number is would probably be what it is in week 3. Like no, there are no more alarms that can be rung in week 3 than what they would if they go and take the L in New York.
I think that number is unlimited. I think the alarm refers to how many different jurisdictions are called in. So a 5-alarm fire means 5 different fire departments come. So
it's however many are in the state?
Yeah, maybe. Or, you know, you could come if it's Cincinnati, they could come from Kentucky, from Indiana. So, yeah, I don't know. There is a cap on the number of alarms.
All right. Well, whatever's the most that's ever happened in the city of Cincinnati's history. So if you're listening to that. I think that's what it is. Sorry about my lack of firefighting knowledge. I'm not super up on the alarm system. I probably should have researched that before I started just talking out of my ass. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
That's just something, you know, that sits there though, right? So, I mean, as I don't know if these guys know those numbers in particular, unless we tell them, and I don't know that we have, but, you know, I do think they are at their best with their back against the wall a little bit in games, in seasons. They've kind of responded to this. You know, I mean, the Raiders game last year is a perfect example. The first one in Vegas. Mm-hmm. You know, they're coming out of the bye, they're under a lot of heat. They lost 2 in a row. It was a tough battle on the road, and they played one of their better games and won a tough game. You know, and then the end of the season, as the things really started getting up against them after they lost to San Francisco, they played some of their best football. And I think there's something to that. But again, you know, it's just there's so much going wrong, particularly offensively, that how quickly can they just all of a sudden pick it up and figure it out? It's a question. I mean, they need one of those games. Really, I don't think it even matters what it looks like. They just need a dub. They just need to buy them some time to keep getting it right and finding answers and go get a W, and buy yourself more time. Really, I mean, two, because you're going Sunday, Thursday, and you know, things can feel a lot different 1 week from today, Jay. A lot. This is going to be a defining, you know, 5-day stretch for this team over the course of this season because of the hole that they dug for themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, it looked like a much more winnable game on the schedule when it came out, that Dolphins game. They're hot. I mean, that comeback against Baltimore.
Number one really, offense.
Yeah. And I mean, that's my upset of the week this week is don't sleep on the Dolphins at home against Buffalo. It is hard to go down to Miami in that heat in September and win, and the Bills are riding high right now. So you could easily see the Dolphins come in here at 3-0. And maybe you heard it, because yesterday, you're right, I was in with Von Bell for like 8 minutes. He never once said, hey, I was 0-2 and went to the playoffs. I don't think these guys do know that history. And I know after I left, he continued to hold court, and you were over there at that point. I don't know if he ever did bring it up.
No.
DJ obviously did remember. I mean, 0-3, then 9-0. That's something you would never forget. But I just, this roster is better. It just is. It's a better roster than last year. It's the same exact coaching staff. It just to think it's just going to fall off is a bit of a stretch. Now, it's a matter of how soon they can get it clicking again and not let other teams pass them by where it's too much of a hill to overcome. But we didn't discuss this, but that would be a good run passer boot. After week four, are they 0-4, 2-2, or 1-3?
Okay, we can put that down. Let's get to that in the predictions section.
Okay,
we'll save that. So teaser there for everybody is what we call that in the biz. So stick around to the end of the podcast and find out what our answers are to that. It's a really good question. To see how they respond, and it could be one of those where, you know, it's what you end up talking about at the end of the season. Is, you know, you started 0-2, and there was a lot of people casting stones, and it brought them together, and yada yada yada. We'll see, but I just think we're about to really learn a lot about this team. You know, the thing I worry about, I think the Bengals worry about, or should worry about, I think that Bengals fans should be worrying about is. I think, you know, they're obviously seeing so much different defense. I mean, they're seeing more cover two than anybody in the league, and exponentially more than anybody could ever have has seen. And it's just they're playing them different. They're refusing to let Burrow throw deep down the sidelines to Chase and hit those balls, and they're just not going to let it happen. And it's taking some adjusting. We've discussed that ad nauseum on Tuesday. Go back and listen to that podcast if you want to hear that more. I feel like one thing about this coaching staff over time is it feels like it does sometimes take them a little bit of time to figure some things out where you say, gosh, why did it take you that long to figure it out, to get it fixed, whatever it has been over the course of the last few years. And you wonder if this is going to be one of those things where by the time you get to week 5 or 6, they start humming and figuring it out and getting it going. And you're like, gosh, it just took you too long. And you gave up too many games in the process. And you just look back at that Steelers game and the 5 turnovers and the missed PAT and the missed 29-yard field goal and just say, Jesus, it's just so different if you just make that. You know, are they in the middle of this conversation? Is the outside panic, you know, so focused on them if they don't hit a 29-yard field goal or a PAT? You know, it's not. But that's what's happening. And that's why, you know, I thought Zach Taylor said something yesterday that was interesting, which was he's like, you know, we're talking about Burrow saying relax and all that. It's like, I just think – that's just a natural thing to say when you're sitting up here and the questions are just repeated about, you know, that essentially suggesting freaking out and panic. It's just not what they feel. They just go back to work and they're doing their job and in the same way they did last season and focusing on getting better. And sure, there's urgency and stuff, but they just go back to work. And it's kind of what they're built on a little bit around here. And it's what helped them last year. They helped them through some tough stretches. And so the idea of panic doesn't make much sense to them because they're not feeling that internally. They only see it when they see us and we're doing it because we're content providers, Jay.
Yeah,
so we're
right.
Here to hit, we're here to talk about alarms and panic settings and all kinds of things like that. other ways that you could, you know, I got the flag, wave my communist China red flag here because it was the only red flag I could find. You know, it's like the flag is in hand, Jay. And if 0-3 happens, it's full red flag with a white flag behind it. Okay. And so, you know, we're here for that. But they don't view it that way. And I think that was the overarching point of the entire mood.
Yeah. And it makes sense. And what you said too about sometimes they seem slow to adjust is you can't win that way. If you switch something up and go a different direction, then half the people are going to say, oh, they're panicking and they're getting away from what makes them good. And then if you don't and you stick with it, then it's, they can't make adjustments. They don't know what they're doing. So it is kind of a catch 22. I'm going to be really interested to see, maybe they lose the toss and it's moot, because if they lose the toss, the Jets are going to defer and the Bengals are going to get the ball first. But it was interesting that because we know how much, and it's really every coach now, this has become kind of the standard, but Zach has always been in this corner of deferring, trying to get the double up between halves. Joe Burrow said, yeah, I think if it was my choice, I would prefer to get the ball first and go down and try to set the tone. If they win the toss, would they step out of that comfort zone and give Joe Burrow the ball first to see if he can go down and manufacture a game-opening drive for the second time in his career? It's a remarkable how good he is in the second half and how bad they are starting games. And Brian Callahan talked about it Monday, about ripping up the script, where they've tried everything. They're looking for answers, anything that'll work. And it's not a panic, we got to find something, but it's a exploring all options. It's the responsible thing to do. To try new things. And I think that's a strength of Zach's, is that he's not stuck in his ways. He's willing, and you mentioned this on the last pod, he's willing to listen to other opinions and not just coaches, other people in the building. Anything that makes sense that he thinks can help them, they're going to explore. So we'll see. We will see what looks different this week in New York.
I think that's a great point. And it was a really interesting topic that popped up, I believe, of a question that you asked. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it is, yeah. I mean, when you talk about what they talked about on Monday of let's find what are ways we can try to get a fast start. What are ways we can do this? That's an obvious one. And an easy way to, and now you've got Burrow on the record saying, yeah, I'd prefer that. I honestly, I don't think it's a coin flip, Jay. You know, we love talking about coin flips here. I had to like retweet the story from last year about the coin flip streak. Maybe one of my favorite aspect of last season. Forget the Super Bowl. No. Forget the playoff wins. No. What did it end at? 11 games?
11, yes.
The 11 game coin flip win streak. Ugh, my favorite topic. My favorite thing about last season. And so. A good chance to talk about coin flips again, but I don't think it's a coin flip in the decision that they would make. I think that they will end up with the ball because, right, when the Jets defer, do we know the Jets' history? I haven't looked at the Jets' history on coin flips, if they are a defer team as well. Probably.
I would assume. I mean, they have a defensive coach. I bet he likes the idea of putting his defense out there first and setting the tone.
So then I would bet. If that happens, if they win, the Bengals are out there first. And I would bet if the Bengals win the toss, we see him ship Burrow out the first. I mostly want the Bengals to win the toss so we can have them have to declare that they're trying something new. But we'll see.
I'm going to give myself homework because I'm going to go back and look at every coin toss the Bengals have won. Have they ever taken the opening kickoff under Zach
Taylor? Coin toss homework. Jay, you're just speaking my love language. I love it. All right, let's before this gets too romantic, let's move to defense. I want to talk a little bit about the state of this defense. I have a story up on the defense today. And, you know, because, hey, at some point we should talk about them, right? Like, at some point, let's discuss what's happening on that the other side of the ball, 50% of the game. And, you know, I think there was one interesting element of this defense to this point is that they've been good. They've been good. They've been quite good. Good to quite good. Strong to quite strong, right? But they haven't been great, and they haven't helped the offense overcome these issues.
Yep.
Like, they have needed the one play, and it was in the rewatch this week. Yeah, there was a few that I just, you know, until you really go and really dissect the all 22 in the replays, you don't see how close they were to a few of those turnovers. In the moment, especially in the heat of a few very tense moments, that kind of gets overlooked. I mean, they were very close to multiple turnovers and could not pull them in against the Cowboys, any of which probably would have changed the outcome of the game, I would venture to say. And, you know, Mike Hilton had one right before halftime that could have been a pick six. It would have been a great pick, but yeah, he jumps the route and he can't quite haul it in on a pass in the flat to Dalton Schultz. You know, he's kicking himself over that. Sam Hubbard has one go right off his hands. Now, it's one of those tough ones. It's sort of like we talked about in the opener of TJ Watt. Sometimes a guy just makes a great play. Like, it's the ball gets on you fast when you're a defensive lineman. But Hubbard was dropping as sort of a sneaky in the flat guy to do just that. Like, his role on that play is to fake out the offense, drop back into the flat to potentially knock down or intercept a pass that they would try to throw out there, thinking that's the hot. They did. It hit him in the hands. Hard play to make. Sam Hubbard, as much as he has a history as a safety and like is a great athlete, like that's a tough play for anybody to make, but hits him in the hands. Jesse Bates, now there's a penalty on this play, but Jesse Bates has one right in his breadbasket, essentially. It ends up dislocating his finger. And Luana Rumo said it was pointing sideways. And he refused to come off the field, didn't even miss a single play, despite he got it popped back in. Either he did it or somebody else popped it back into place, this finger that was hanging sideways. You've seen like the Anthony Munoz finger, oh, right? Yeah. Like, that's what I always think of when I think of that, is that like, what the hell is going on there? And the idea of like not coming out for that is something. And Lou talked about, you know, that's the reason he has faith. That despite all these missed opportunities that have existed, and these missed chances to get these turnovers, that this group is so tight. Like, Jesse doesn't even want to come off the field for a single play. He's like, that stuff happens. Like, guys that aren't invested, their fingers sideways. Like, they're coming off the field thinking about them. But, you know, there's a real chemistry, camaraderie, and brotherhood amongst this team that has made them good defensively. And you can see that. And for that reason, there's a lot of belief that keep putting yourself in position, they will make those plays. My point is, I think they have to make those plays on Sunday. The way this offense is just still trying to figure it out, and Joe Flacco on the other side, I think that's – they can't be dropping those, not getting those turnovers, because until the offense starts to really get it going, they've got to get those to give them some short fields or score themselves or just find some way to kind of buy some time.
Yeah, the question is that – a good sign or a bad sign that they're getting their hands on that many balls? Because yes, you would like to see them come up with some of them, but you also have to figure that eventually a dam's going to break. And you kind of saw that in the postseason last year, where it just takes one or two and they get on this roll and it builds on itself. And, you know, the other one you talked about was, I don't know who would have been in coverage, but the at the end of the game, the pass at Logan Wilson tips, they're throwing – Cooper Rush is throwing into double coverage. And instead, the ball gets tipped the other way, and it ends up going right to – it looks like it's going right to Cheeto, and then the Cowboys receiver flashes in front of his face, catches the ball out of the air. They had so many opportunities, and that was maybe one of my favorite parts of Lou's talk with us yesterday, was him reenacting some of the almost interceptions. And I think that is frustrating as it has to be so close and not get any. I tend to think that it is a more of a positive sign that at least if you're getting your hands on those balls and creating those opportunities, they are eventually going to come. And it's not like this team, this defense doesn't have a history of it. So, you know, we'll see. Joe Flacco has a tendency to throw some interceptions, particularly against the Bengals. And it's shocking that they only have one so far this year. And that was a forced fumble. That was a Von Bell rip out or a punch out. They were very good at that last year too, rallying to the ball and getting the ball out. So just another, it's one of those other things that you pile on that just hasn't quite gone the way things went last year. And once those things start returning and evening out, I do think you're going to see much better performances. I mean, you will live all day long with the defense. If they get 20 points, 20 to 23 points every game, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah. And, you know, the pick six was not on them. So even right. less than that. And so you're talking about a defense, again, that has played good, but they haven't really been tested. Again, backup quarterbacks. Like, that's just it. Like, you should be getting turnovers off of these types of quarterbacks, making plays against them, and they have not. They've faced Trubisky and Cooper Rush, and they have no interceptions to show for it. And that's part of being a backup quarterback. A lot of what they're trying to do is just go out there and not make a mistake, and that's kind of the way Joe Flacco has played a little bit. Get the ball out quick, try not to make too many mistakes. He's thrown 5 touchdowns to just 1 interception thus far, and you know, and they had a nice offensive day against Cleveland last week. Not so much in the opener. They lost 24-9 to the Ravens. But Joe Flacco has – I don't know if it's going to be the Bengals uniform that does this to him or if it was, you know, Mike Zimmer and Paul Gunther in some way. But Joe Flacco has 25 interceptions that he's thrown against the Bengals. The most he's thrown against any other team is 13. Granted, there was a lot of games against the Bengals, but – they've always sort of, this team has always sort of had his number. We'll see if that plays out with the Jets. I think the theory has always been to blitz Joe Flacco and try to get after him since he's so immobile and let him make a bad decision. We'll see if that ends up being the case if we see more blitzing from Lou Anarumo this weekend against Flacco. But either way, that's certainly something to look for that needs to be a part of this game for the Bengals. Jay, you have more bad Flacco stats?
I do. So he has more multiple interception games against the Bengals, 7, than he does 0 interception games against the Bengals, 5. And the 25 interceptions against the Bengals you mentioned, that's the second most of all time, Big Ben with 34. That makes sense because they division opponent, both those guys have had long careers. I went and looked to see where Flacco would rank in interception percentage. So the number of interceptions thrown against the Bengals and taking into account how many passes they threw against the Bengals, he's 39th. The remarkable part of this stat is above him, there are 9 Hall of Famers that have a higher interception percentage against the Bengals, including Joe Namath, number 2, 7.1%, and Jim Kelly, number 3, 6.6%. The only quarterback that has a higher interception percentage against the Bengals, you got to go way back to Jim Plunkett at 7.6.
Oh, so, Jim Plunkett fans in the house? Oh, you're going to piss off all the Jim Plunkett fans that listen to HTPG here. It is interesting, and we'll see how that goes on Sunday. All right, let's just take a quick break.
And now, 2 pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
One other thing I want to bring in about the defense before we move on to talk about the Jets with Zach Rosenblatt is the question that many people have had has been about Dax Hill, about Dax yep. Hill's role and why he has not played. He's only played 8 snaps on defense through 2 games, and he's just standing next to Lou Anarumo all game. And I don't know if Lou wanted to do this or was waiting for this, but it certainly – the way he talked suggested he was waiting for this, and he went off on this topic. I tweeted the, you know, sort of the transcript of everything he had to say. It was basically in three parts. But I feel like hearing him do it gives an even better illustration of how he feels. So those who've been asking, and it's been one of the most common questions, particularly on the defensive side of the ball to this point, about why is Dax Hill not playing more? Why can't you find a way to work him in? Lou Anarumo had that answer. It starts off with a question about something else we have in here, but he references the smoke break. and so we wanted to set that up as we get in from that into all of Lou Anarumo's very emphatic opinion on why Dax Hill has only played 8 snaps on defense thus far.
Could Jesse benefit from a smoke break or two and work Dax in, or is he just too valuable to take off the field?
Yeah, no, he's a no. I don't mean substitute. I mean just a call.
Like yeah, I know, but I mean
no, he does not need that at all. Yeah. He's good. Yeah, those guys, like D linemen rotate, as everybody knows. Mm-hmm. Linebackers can rotate. I've been doing this for 30 years. I've never rotated a corner and a safety in my life, and I never will. The starters are the starters for a reason, and there's usually good reason. That kid will get in when I feel it's the right time, the right place, in the right role, in the right game, and that's how that's going to go.
Do you think, following up on Jay's question, yeah, that you're in the minority when you with the secondary rotating guys out? Like,
no,
you've gone to
100% not. No.
That's what most teams try to approach them.
Yeah.
Is there a reason for that?
Because those guys are the best guys, and you don't mess with corners and DBs.
I guess nobody.
It's got. No, it's just. I don't want to get mad. It's
like who's secondary?
This is my baby, right? The DB. So they. I always say, right? They're shortstop, second baseman. If they're not, if I just flip you the ball because I know the guy's going to be there, without even looking, that stuff takes time. The communication, plays, high level pass offs during a play where guys are communicating. These young guys have no idea what that's all about until they can slowly and surely get into it and see it. I had Xavier Howard as a rookie, okay? And the first few games, not so good, okay? It took him till about week 14 before he became Xavier Howard. And I think he's one of the, if not the best corner in the league. It takes time for those guys. So the fact that, you know, Dax and, you know, Cam's coming back off the injury, the fact that they have time to not get beat in a game and lose some confidence, because as soon as you put those guys out there too fast and those guys get rattled, it's a problem. It's a problem because nobody sees the three technique get out of his gap and give up a B gap run. Nobody sees the linebackers shed the block the wrong way. Everybody in the stadium, 80,000 and 15 million people, and everybody thinks they know that the corner gave up the play or the safety took the wrong angle. So confidence for those guys is huge. And when you have a tight-knit group like we have, there's absolutely no reason to screw up that chemistry.
All right, Jay, do you have any confusion about Lou's opinion on this topic?
I do not. I mean, you think about how bad things were the first couple years here, and I've never heard him use that kind of tone before. It's clear. I don't know if he's getting questions about it when it's not like these guys go out, and we've asked a couple times, but it's not like we've been harping on him about it. I was really kind of surprised by his tone. And then credit to Mike, asked the follow-up. There was actually a couple questions in between my question and then when Mike asked the question, following up on mine and going back. And I thought it was great for the way that Lou broke that down and why you don't do that with corners and safeties. And just one of the things that really appreciate about that guy, that he is willing to kind of break things down and explain them to you instead of just, you know, kind of he even apologized at the end of the session and said, sorry, I got a little snippy with you guys. It's hot. And and it's like, I mean, there is no reason to apologize for that, but it was notable that we have not heard that type of tone from him that I can remember on any question since he's been here.
Look, we haven't asked him much about it. Some, not a lot. Mm-hmm. Maybe I don't think they hear from fans with that stuff. That feels like something that's been brewing internally.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like, you know, look, first round pick, not playing, right? You don't think that scouts, I shouldn't say that because I have no knowledge that scouts are getting down Lou Anarumo's neck. I shouldn't say that. I take that back. But that happens. Like internally, people inside buildings that watch a first round pick not play tend to voice that, hey, why can't Dax Hill get on the field more? They do. That happens everywhere, and you would expect it. There's people with differing opinions inside of business offices, in front offices, in coaching offices. And you know what? If you feel like you need to defend it or you're sick of hearing it, sometimes it comes off like that, and that's okay. I have a hard time arguing with his stance.
Mm-hmm.
Dax Hill was not a pick for week one of season one. He was a pick certainly to be your starting safety next year after Jesse Bates leaves and to cover any gaps that show up if Bell or Bates or Hilton go down and potentially develop a package with him. I'm not going to fight that. The thing was, I think we built up because he looked so good in the preseason.
Exactly.
They talked about what packages could look like and what you could do and how versatile they could be and how exciting that could be. And we haven't seen that yet. We also haven't seen a starting quarterback yet. So maybe, you know, it's time. These teams are not necessarily out there testing. Now, when Tua and the Dolphins and Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle come to town, maybe we see more Dax Hill. Maybe we see more of him out there needing that speed and versatility to try to shake things up. We'll see. But for that, I'm okay. I liked Lou's explanation. I think it was spot on. So anyway, hopefully that helps people that have been asking the Dax Hill question. It certainly lets you know exactly where the defensive coordinator stands. All right, time to turn to Jets. And for that, nothing better than to bring in our friend who covers the Jets for us in New York, Zach Rosenblatt. Here's Jay's conversation with Zach, breaking down all things happening in New York right now.
Zach, how you doing?
I'm great. I am in New Jersey, so.
New Jersey, okay. Probably not too far from the stadium, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's the mood there this week? I mean, how different is the narrative right now if they don't stage that incredible comeback?
It is crazy, like 2 minutes to change how everybody feels because fans were already so mad after that week one game where they just kept making mistake after mistake and everybody was doing the whole same old Jets thing, which is why Robert Saleh went and said his receipts comments that everybody started mocking. And, you know, I think they've said all the right things in the aftermath. They, you know, everybody's talked about this is just one game and, you know, just because they won doesn't mean this and that. And they have a lot to correct and all that stuff. But, you know, it is funny. Like, They were making a lot of the same mistakes throughout that game, and then everything just kind of turned at the end there. And, you know, all of a sudden we're talking about how good Joe Flacco is, and, you know, the story is Garrett Wilson and the way they came back and, you know, their resolve and all that stuff. And now all of a sudden the fan base is confident again in this team. So it's very interesting that we're sitting here in week three and the Bengals are the 0-2 team in this discussion because I don't think anybody saw that coming.
I mean, it is amazing. You mentioned the receipts comment. So that, and then they lose five of their final six last year, 4-13 overall, would have been an 0-2 start this year with that bad loss to the Ravens, or no, it was a bad loss, but they just did not look good. I mean, could the seat have been hot for Robert Saleh was that a job saving win possibly? Not that they would pull the trigger right away, but.
The heat would be coming from the fan base at the very least. I think the organization likes Robert Saleh a lot, and I don't think they're ready to panic quite like the fan. I don't think he helped himself by the things he said. He's an emotional guy. He kind of shoots from the hip. That's kind of his whole thing. And so he saw everybody calling this the same old Jets, and he wanted to come out and be like, this is not the same old Jets. Maybe week one wasn't the time to do that. It's an interesting question because if they had lost that game, and especially with the defense playing poorly because he's supposed to be a defensive genius and all that stuff, and with how bad the defense was last year, like it would have been a bad state of affairs going into this week. But at the same time, like the expectation was not that this team was going to be a playoff team. You know, I don't think anybody thought they would win that week one game anyway against the Ravens. I don't know that anybody thought they would even be 1-1 necessarily going into week three. So like this was always going to be like a 6-8 win team this year, and they're still on the path to do that. They still might have been if they were 0-2 right now, as we were talking, just because of how the schedule plays out and how weird the NFL is. So I don't necessarily think he would have been on the hot seat, but the heat would have been coming from the fan base for sure.
Just like it's coming for Zach Taylor right now. I mean, while we're on the topic of revisionist history and hypotheticals, I mean, if they lose that game last week, is there a chance the Bengals see Mike White again for a second consecutive year this week?
It's funny. Like, it felt like that was inevitable. Like, we were heading down that path. Like, Joe Flacco fans were calling for Mike White pretty quickly in week one. And so in my head, I'm like, it's definitely going to happen, isn't it? Like, it just felt like inevitable. But now I don't necessarily think they would have done it. I think they trust Joe Flacco way more than they trust Mike White. For as good as White played against the Bengals last year, he was pretty bad the week after that. He didn't look very good in camp or the preseason this year. So I think their goal was to stick with Flacco until Zach Wilson came back this whole time. So I don't know if that necessarily, it depends on how bad it, like hypothetically, if Joe Flacco had a terrible game, maybe there it's a different discussion, but he was really good. Yeah. And so it's Joe Flacco against the Bengals, a team that he obviously has played a lot in his career too.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually number three in the league in passing right now, passing yards at least. You mentioned it. The Bengals are very familiar, not this group, but Bengals fans are very familiar with Joe Flacco. But he hasn't played the Bengals since Marvin Lewis was the coach. I think 2018 was the last game. He's 37 now. How has he looked, both in the preseason and, you know, I mean, you said he played well last week, but in the opener against the Ravens, what have you seen from Flacco so far?
You know, it's kind of what you would almost expect. You know, maybe he still has a little more arm strength than you would think for a 37-year-old, but he's just very robotic and slow. So if the pocket breaks down and he's holding on to the ball too long, bad things happen. And that's what happened in week one. He was holding on to the ball too long with the offensive line was not playing well. This last week, they made a concerted effort to get the ball out of his hands quickly, middle of the field. They took a few more deep shots downfield. And just generally, he was operating a little smoother and doing what he's good at, which is getting the ball out quick, getting on screens and into the flat, you know, finding a guy like Garrett Wilson who can make plays after the catch. So I think that's kind of the key with him. If they're moving quickly, if the offense is doing quick throws, like they're not going to have many, you know, most of their drives when they score are going to be long drives, and that they're fine with that. Just kill the clock as much as you can. And I think they're going to try and do that with the Bengals too. And so that's what it comes down to. Like, he's not a guy that's going to be able to obviously evade a pass rush. And so if a pass rush is killing that offensive line, they're in a lot of trouble. And so there are some limitations with what he can do, but they also like his ability to just run the offense and do what he's supposed to, as opposed to someone like Zach Wilson, who's still developing ability to do what he's told. And a lot of his, you know, skills are like, you know, on the playground and improvising and stuff like that. Like, Joe Flacco is not going to improvise. They're going to tell him where to go and he's going to go there.
And you mentioned that pass rush could be effective against Flacco. I mean, the Bengals pass rush kind of taking cover under these offensive woes. They have not got that pass rush going. So maybe facing a statue like quarterback like Flacco can help get the sacks and the pressures a little more. I'm going to go with a different segue here, because Flacco's a guy Bengals fans are familiar with. So is CJ Uzomah. What are his chances of playing this week? I know a lot of Bengals fans would like to see him out there. He was a fan favorite here in Cincinnati. But where is he at with that hamstring injury?
Yeah, Salah said yesterday that it'll be right up until the game again, which isn't a good sign if he's saying that on Monday. So I would guess he doesn't play. And it's unfortunate, because week one, they didn't really get him the ball very much, and he didn't play as much. It was mostly Tyler Conklin. And then he hurt his hamstring, I think, later in the week in practice. And so it seems like it's going to be a week-to-week thing, which is unfortunate, because they brought him in because they wanted to really solidify their tight end position, which has been terrible for a long time, and he hasn't really had a chance to get going yet.
A little bit of overkill there, isn't it? I mean, they signed Conklin. They signed CJ Uzomah. They bring back their starter from last year, and then they draft a tight end in the third round. Is this a tight end-driven offense? What's going on there with that plan?
Well, I think they're just trying to take as many shots as they can, because they've been truly bad at tight end, and it hasn't looked good through a couple weeks, to be honest. I think they do like the idea of running a lot of 12 personnel, being able to run the ball more, and just have like a couple of tight ends in CJ and Tyler Conklin, who are both like quality blockers and just solid pass catchers in theory. So they just want reliable guys there. And I mean, it hasn't really been that way so far, but I think they like that combination they have there.
Yeah, another guy that got away, Carl Lawson. And I think a lot of Bengals fans were really upset to see what happened to him. I mean, he went through an ACL here and recovered from that, and then was a guy a lot of people wanted the Bengals to re-sign and bring back, and they really didn't make an effort. They went after Trey Hendrickson instead. That worked out really well. But it looks like Lawson's off to a pretty good start already through two games.
Yeah, you know, it was really unfortunate last year because they obviously paid him a lot of money to come in and like right. be their guy as a pass rusher and to tell your Achilles in the preseason. Like he made his debut with this team this year, essentially, mm-hmm. and it's a 3-year contract. So it's not ideal for anybody. You know, he looked really good in training camp. I think there's been some ups and downs so far. I think last week he did have that. He split a sack with Quinnen Williams and he got some pressure later in the game, but it took him a little while to get going. And I think you're saying it's taken him a little. They do rotate a lot. So I think he only plays like something like 50% of the snaps because they rotate a lot. So maybe it's harder to get into a groove, but I think they're really trying to ease him back and get him back to where, you know, to being the guy that you guys saw a couple years ago in Cincinnati. And I mean, a lot of what they can do is relying on him. You know, they don't really blitz a lot, and they really rely on the front four to get pressure. Mm-hmm. And the front four has not gotten enough pressure so far. So they really need him against this Bengals team, which, as you obviously know, has given up a lot of pressure and sacks and all that stuff. Yeah. If he's ever going to come back to earth, I'm sure he would love it to be against his old team. So this is going to be a big week for him. I think they need to see him, you know, be that dominant pass rusher that they paid. And, yeah, I mean, I think he can certainly get there. The talent is certainly there, but he hasn't really quite hit that mark yet.
Yeah, the big issue with him, I mean, he was the king of pressures. He just struggled to finish. Yeah. He was always back there, and there was just so many woulda, coulda, shoulda sacks. So it'd be interesting to see if he can finish one or two off against Joe Burrow the way everybody else has that's gone against Joe Burrow this year. One more Cincinnati connection. I know a lot of our listeners are probably interested in the first round pick out of UC, the former Bearcat Sauce Gardner. Mm. How has he looked as just filling right in as a starter right off the bat?
Yeah, honestly, I've talked about this a lot on our podcast. Can't wait since training camp. He's impressed me as much as any rookie like I've covered, honestly. I get both in terms of his personality and his confidence and the skill level and the physicality, the athleticism. Like it's just he's really great combination of all those things. And I think throughout camp, I never really saw him get beat one-on-one at any point. Teams weren't even targeting him in the preseason. In week one, he looked really good. He had a great pass breakup on Mark Andrews. And so they trusted him enough to put him on a guy like Mark Andrews, who the Ravens are obviously going to throw the ball to. And he had a really great pass breakup on him where he wasn't even facing the ball and knocked it down. There has been some miscommunication on the back end, and that led to a touchdown both last week and this week. I don't necessarily think that's all his fault, but there's clearly something there that maybe he's a rookie and he's still learning some of the play calls and stuff like that. But I think his ceiling is extremely high. He has the ability to be a shutdown corner, and they have a great corner on the other side in DJ Reed. So there's even less pressure on him to like just cover the best receiver on the other team every week. So he's on the right track to being like a legit star cornerback, I think.
Yeah, because I was going to ask about that. I mean, the Bengals have not seen a lot of man coverage this year. Obviously, the teams got burned by Ja'Marr Chase with that over and over last year. I'm sure the Jets aren't just going to go complete zone. When they do go man, is Sauce a guy that would follow Ja'Marr Chase, or do you think they would just play sides and wherever Ja'Marr lines up, it's either going to be Reed or Sauce?
Yeah, I think they believe in both Reed and Sauce to such a degree they've even described it as Robert Saleh said, like, we can put both of them on an island. So I don't think they feel like they need to make those guys travel. They feel like DJ Reed can get the one side, and they think that Sauce Gardner can cover the others. And so far that's been true. You know, Mari Cooper had a pretty good game. He was a little too open in the middle of the field. That's kind of the area where I imagine the Bengals would try and attack with Ja'Marr. Especially because the safeties have been a real issue so far. So, I would be surprised if they traveled, but obviously Ja'Marr Chase is also a unique player and he's better than any receiver they've gone against so far.
Yeah. I mean, another big time receiver, taken early, Garrett Wilson, the Ohio State product. How has he looked so far? I know he got his first touchdown last week. How's he coming along? I think there's some parallels there between him and Ja'Marr Chase from their rookie training camps.
Yeah, I even wanted to ask you about that because, you know, it's funny. During camp, Garrett Wilson was making plays that you could see the athleticism and the talent was there, but he was having a lot of drops, you know, a lot of mistakes in that way. And I know, obviously, that was like the whole thing with Ja'Marr Chase last year and his whole quote with like the football being weird or whatever it was, and everybody latched on to that. Then, obviously, he had the season he did. I mean, he was pretty stellar in week two. like to a degree that I was really blown away by. His route running is remarkable. He's not like a huge guy. I think he's listed at like 6'1", but he's athletic, so athletic that he plays way bigger than his size. And he uses that athleticism. Like he was juking guys at the line of scrimmage and creating space for himself. And he makes plays after the catch. He's fast enough to go downfield. And so like this felt like the moment where everybody realized how good he was. So I was curious when like you realized that last year with Chase, because I thought Garrett Wilson, I thought he was going to make plays throughout the year, but I thought we wouldn't see like this version of him until later in the season. And now I'm like convinced that he's a number one receiver already. So I was curious when like the moment was for you last year with Jamar Chase, where you're like, okay, this guy's special.
Yeah. I maybe the opener.
Yeah.
I think where it really clicked was the week three game against Pittsburgh, where they can't do anything at all. And then Burrow throws one up for him and he wins one-on-one. He basically catches the back half of the football in the end zone, totally flips the script, which we saw a lot early on. It was even through all the struggles and I think the comments got blown out about talk about the college balls with the white stripes. And he was just someone asking what the difference was and he pointed it out. And then all of a sudden people were
all
making
the context
it out.
Was lost. Yeah.
Yes. Which happens a lot. Twitter. And, but it never felt like, oh, this guy might not be what they thought he was. It was always a matter of, okay, these drops aren't going to define his career, but he's got to get it figured out pretty quick. And then it was pretty remarkable because so many of his drops were on easy passes. And even they gave him three snaps in the preseason. And the one pass that Joe Burrow threw was a wide receiver screen right to him, drops it. And then you're like, okay, what is going on?
Yeah.
The first pass, first target in the opener was one he had to really go get, and he did, and he made a great catch along the sideline. And I think that's right when it clicked, like, okay, that's the guy you expected to see. And I think it let him exhale too and be like, okay, it's just football, like I've known it. And then a couple drives later, they hit a big bomb touchdown, which kind of defined his season. And so it was kind of what you expected in the opener, but I think it was that week three game against Pittsburgh where it's like, oh, wow, this guy, because he caught a long one in week two also, but that was, they were blown out and the Bears were kind of laying back. And so, you know, three straight games with a touchdown, all of them long ones. And you're like, okay, you can see now why he's the number five overall pick in the draft. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it sounds like Wilson kind of had that game last week where you kind of get off the schneid, you have the big game, and then you just not hit the ground running, but you become what everyone expected you to be.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off, but yeah.
No, you're good.
But like it's something similar happened with him this last week where he had a bad drop. It was on third down in the, I think it was the fourth quarter. I'm blanking right now. It was third down in the Browns territory. He dropped it. Would have been a first down. They had to like punt it away or whatever. And he thought he cost them the game at that point. Like he was really worried about that. And then obviously all the craziness happens. They get the ball back. And then he makes a great play on that touchdown pass. And, you know, it's not like anybody was going to blame him or anything like that. But so I think that's going to be a big turning point for him too, where, you know, he's someone that's really hard on himself. Like I noticed that in camp, like he would make a drop. He would come to the sideline cursing and ready to throw his helmet. Like even after he'd made a bunch of plays, he'd have a drop and he'd take it really personally, which isn't the worst attribute to have. But I think week two was a good sign that, you know, he can bounce back from those mistakes pretty quickly. And I think that's a pretty good sign of like a receiver who is going to be pretty good, I think, too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see him going against this defense because the Bengals are pretty strong in the secondary. Not last year. Mike White got him. it was really surprising. And I'm just curious. My last one for you here is just that. And maybe you haven't got into it yet. Maybe it'll be the availability tomorrow where they really kind of turn their focus to the Bengals. But was that brought up at all in the open locker room session that you've had so far this week where they're facing a Bengals team again and that upset from last year, is that something that's been the players have been talking about?
It hasn't come up yet, but it's definitely going to be something that is certainly asked about and talked about this week. I think the combination of them knowing that maybe the Bengals want some revenge for how that game went last year and the Bengals being 0-2 and, you know, everybody's talking about how it's a week-to-week league in the locker room and stuff. And, you know, it's funny how quickly things change because after that game, Mike White was like a, you know, celebrity in New York to the point where like he told me in the training camp that he had people like yelling. He was like at home in Tampa in the offseason and like a guy at the Chick-fil-A drive-thru was like Mike effing White. And then that became like a like a saying. Like that's why anytime something bad happens, they're all like, put Mike White back in the game. Yeah. And that happened. I mean, his jersey's in the hall. We got sent to the Hall of Fame because of that game. Like, it's going to be one of those weird things that we look back at and be like, I can't believe that happened. But yeah, that's definitely going to be a topic this week. I'm sure it will be where you are too. I'm curious if it even has already been talked about, honestly. But yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see how they talk about it. I'm sure Mike White will talk this week at his locker at the very least. And I imagine the Bengals have a bad taste in their mouth from how that happened.
Yes. It's almost the intrigue increases. It's almost like this is a division game because you're playing the Jets again. And they're like honorary members of the AFC North because they start with Ravens, Browns, Bengals. Yeah, you rarely see that. So it's a lot to look for on Sunday, and appreciate you helping us break it down and join us, and look forward to catching up with you in the press box on Sunday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jay.
All right, Jay, as I like to do after these, most impactful takeaway for you from that conversation?
I don't know if there was anything super impactful. I think the two-prong benefit for the Bengals of where that Jets team would be if they don't pull off that miraculous comeback last week. Then you're talking about two 0-2 teams, two desperate cornered teams. I think this is a better situation. It's almost a flip of last year where the Jets are feeling pretty good about themselves. And yeah, the Bengals went to New York last year coming off a loss, but it would be a lot different. And the reason it's a two-pronged is because that great comeback by the Jets, or that, I don't know how great it was, lucky maybe, was against the Browns. So that helps the Bengals too in terms of the division. But, you know, I want to see – I'm interested to see if CJ is going to be able to go. I think that'll be a really fun reunion. Zach didn't sound too optimistic, but CJ did go limited yesterday. So the fact that he was back at practice, there's a chance. You got the Carl Lawson connection. It's just – and then, of course, Sauce Gardner, which we hit on. That's really going to be the interesting one for me is, you know, T. Higgins now, it seemed like yesterday he was a rookie and kind of getting picked on by veterans in this league. And now it's flipped. And maybe he can teach Sauce Gardner a lesson or two, or Ja'Marr Chase might have something for Sauce Gardner. I think that's going to be really fun to watch that matchup and see how the rookie that a lot of people in this area that follow the Bengals also follow the Bearcats and saw Sauce have a great college career for the Bearcats. He's going to get tested this week, you would think. No matter how much Tampa 2 the Jets play, he's going to find himself in man coverage at times against those guys.
Yeah, and you know, with Sauce and Ja'Marr, I think a lot of people are thinking about that matchup. I mean, we talk about last week, Amari Cooper, 9 receptions on 10 targets for 101 yards, a touchdown, was able to really have a nice day. Number one receiver for the Browns, just getting balls from Jacoby Brissett, was able to have a really nice day. So you wonder if that's an opportunity for Ja'Marr Chase to also have a nice day. But again, we'll see. You know, that Jets defense has been suspect. It's really interesting that you're talking about the Jets right now and you're talking about the defensive head coach and who has invested a lot on their defensive line and high picks and big money across their secondary and everywhere. And their defense is really what's most suspect at this point, you know, giving up 30 and 24 points to the Browns and the Ravens. So we'll see if this can be the way for the Bengals to get out of their funk, particularly maybe running the ball. Now, the Browns have a vicious running attack. No one would ever compare the Bengals rushing game to the Browns, but you know, they were certainly able to take advantage. Last week, you had Chubb with 5.1 per carry and Kareem Hunt with 4.5 per carry. You know, they're 37 carries for 184 yards total in the game. I mean, they were able to really run on the Jets. And obviously Baltimore was too, but again, that's what they do well. The Bengals, as you might have learned on Tuesday's episode, stink at running the ball right now. They're not very good at it. They're worst in the league in efficiency, despite nothing but light boxes. You know, Frank Pollock said yesterday, when we talked to him, you know, Rod Marinelli, a defensive coordinator for a number of years, is one of his good friends in the league, and said Rod Marinelli used to tell him that Tampa 2 is his best run defense because of the way everybody could fire down and keep the explosive runs from happening because everybody's far back, charging toward the runner. So, yeah, they may get to the second level a little more often, but they get tackled more often because there's just more guys running downhill to the ball. And okay. I mean, maybe that's part of this too, is what the reason is. But I mean, the need for more explosive runs and efficient runs, maybe that is part of this whole cover two thing, which is the greatest defense. This Tampa 2 is the greatest thing that's ever been invented. I suspect that no one in the entire league is going to be in anything other than Tampa 2 on Sunday, since it's just such a devastating defensive grouping. But we'll see how that goes. We got some more game. Let's talk a little bit more about this game, Jay. What do you think determines it?
If the Bengals offense can get going, I think I know what's going to happen. Jets offense versus Bengals defense. I think you're going to see them be in the 17 to 23 point range. And can the Bengals put together three or more touchdown drives? I think that is really where this lies. And yeah, you would like to see them start fast. I don't think they have to, but they've got to. They have to be better in the red zone. They got to be better on third down. They got to put some of these drives together and finish them without Evan McPherson coming on to kick field goals and putting him out there for extra points. I think I know what's going to happen when the Jets have the ball, but the big question is, what does the Bengals offense do?
They should take the ball and start in a 2-minute drill. Yeah. They should tempo on the ball, no huddle. You know, it opens you up to three plays that last 15 seconds, and all of a sudden you're punting, and it's like so demoralizing. But I think you go tempo, no huddle, just do something different, you know, and try to see if you can get things moving that way. Come in hot, right? Don't just why not? Why not?
Exactly. Why not? They've already done the three and out kick. And I mean, not 15 seconds, but they've not been very good on opening drives. So
try not to throw a pick six in the process. I will say that would also help. A big part of that. But yeah, I think you come out and try to come out fast that way. I'm with you. You know, so you're saying no Mike White effect this year. We're not going to see the fact that Matt LaFleur just has the Bengals number and knows. You know, Mike, they talked a little bit, that game last year was featured a million throws underneath to running backs and then to receivers just settling in the zones about, you know, between 5 and 10 yards, and Mike White just hitting them over and over again for gains or just finding those zones. You know, they said there was a lot of lessons from that, and while – Joe Flacco isn't Mike White, and who knows, maybe we see Mike White if something happens to Flacco in this game. But while the quarterback's different, the scheme is the same. A lot of the weapons are the same. Michael Carter's still there as a running back underneath. You still got some of the same receivers. You know, they viewed that as, okay, that's an easy fix. They were just too soft. They were just playing too conservative and too soft, and look for more aggression and playing tighter and trying to get after them that way, and just not allowing and being more prepared for all the checkdowns. I mean, they had a gazillion checkdowns to the running backs in that game, and the running backs made hay on them, and they're dangerous backs. Breece Hall, first round or rookie out of Iowa State, really talented, really good running back. Same with Michael Carter, who had a good day against them last year. You know, how much tighter they play and force Flacco to make some throws, bring some pressure, try to get some turnovers, I think is going to be a big part of this equation.
I think Lou made a great point yesterday too, where he said that was their worst tackling game of the year. And that's the bad time to have it when you've got all those little checkdowns are supposed to be 4 or 5 yard gains, and they're turning into 12, 13 because the Bengals are missing the initial tackle. And that was not a hallmark of this defense. It's not now, and it wasn't later in the year. They were a pretty solid tackling team. So get that cleaned up. Even if they do go that route and start hitting them with the checkdowns again, get the guy on the ground and you know, turn it into second and five, third and five instead of first and 10. I had forgotten about that. And when Lou said that, it made me kind of perk up like, that's right. That was a really bad game as far as tackling.
All right, let's get into some fun stuff here. Run, pass, or boot. Run, pass, or boot. The Bengals lose. The Bengals score 40. Or Burrow is sacked 6 times again. What is the most likely to happen? Run, pass, or boot. Bengals lose. Bengals break out and score 40. Burrow sacked 6 times again.
The hard one here is which one. I could see any of these happening. Which one do you boot? I'm going to run with Burrow sacked six times again because we don't know what's up. If Lael Collins, I mean, he's gotten sacked 7 and 6 times with Collins in there. If Collins is out and they have to go to Adeniji, who knows? That's, it's not a good recipe, and they can still win the game. They could be 2-0 right now with them getting sacked like that. So I'm going to run with sacks six times. I'm going to pass on scoring 40, and I'm going to boot them losing. I think you're going to see a different Bengals team this week. Can I get my armband? I mean,
are you going
6%? I mean, yeah. your season's, no, it was 2.4%.
2.4% chance of making the playoffs. Now, that was not an expanded playoff. There is one extra team allowed in now.
Right.
So maybe that skews them slightly. An extra game and an extra team, I think, probably expand your number a little bit. But I'm with you. You know, I've done the must-win rant very recently. It is very tempting to pull it out in week 3. I'm not going to. But it's very tempting. I'm going to lean on extra week and extra team that makes the playoffs. I'm going to lean into that. I'm going to lean into this division a little bit, all being 1-1 ahead of them, and say it really is a long way to go. I'm not going to go must win yet. But it's a hard – man, it's a hard argument to make. I'm really struggling with my own philosophical core right now. This Thursday, Paul, is like fighting with last Thursday, Paul, that went on the must-win rant, right? Like, I'm just really having a hard time with it because it's so it makes sense. It makes sense.
It does.
I'm gonna run with Burrow sack six times the same way because, I mean, why not? I mean, at this point, we would be surprised. I am going to pass on Bengals lose. I think they could lose this game. Of course they could lose this game. I don't think they're going to have an offensive breakout. I mean, the Jets defense isn't great, but I don't think they're at the point now where all of a sudden they're just going to start tearing it up. I think they'd need some turnovers for that. I think if they get 3 turnovers, okay, now you start talking about that, but I'm going to bet against that. So I'm going to say I'm going to boot Bengals score 40. I'm going to boot the offensive breakout. I think that's going to take some time still. Okay, we teased this earlier. This is along the same lines. Run, pass, or boot, Jay. Bengals are 1-3. Bengals are 2-2. Our Bengals are 0-4, a week and a day from right now.
I'm booting 0-4. That's not.
You're
just
saying no way.
No way. I think they win this one. So 1-3 at the minimum. That Dolphins game's a toss up to me at this point. A lot depends on what happens with the Dolphins in Buffalo. If they upset that game, I see them coming in fat and happy and the Bengals getting them. If they lose that game, a little more urgency. But I have faith that this team is going to get it figured out. The roster is too good. There's too much continuity. I'm going to run with 2-2, pass 1-3, and boot 0-4.
Those Thursday night games are really hard on the road team.
Yep.
Like, road Thursday is way harder than the home Thursday, even if you were on the road. That doesn't work vice versa. It's really hard. And then you have a very high-profile, emotional-focused Sunday game against the Bills in front of it. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a tough turnaround for the Dolphins. Bengals at home on Thursday night – underneath the lights, you know, they have tend to play better in that type of an environment, I think. You've got all the other stuff that's going to be going on, Ring of Honor and White Tiger and all this crap. I just think there's going to be a lot of energy from the Bengals in that game and a really tough environment for the Dolphins to walk into. So I'm booting 0-4 as well because I think one of these two is going to happen. But man, I'm gonna run with 1-3 and pass on 2-2. I just don't think this game is some. I just I don't like going to the Jets. If I'm a Bengals, if I'm the Bengals, I just, there's just the things that have gone wrong, the things that went wrong last year, the way things can just get crazy. There's just something weird about it that feels a little, it's far, far, far from some kind of slam dunk, especially after what we saw the last 2 weeks. So I don't think you can safely say, oh yeah, they're going to rip off two in a row. Why wouldn't they? I don't know, because they've looked bad and sloppy for 2 weeks in a row now. And we've talked ad nauseum since the training camp started about, can a team flip the switch? Well, they might need to flip it again. They might be looking to flip it again, and they didn't flip it the first time. So we shall see. That covers that. We've got, let's get to Growler Bet here, Jay, for Sunday. Bengals Growler Bet, of course. You can get some delicious 50 West beer, which you may need to chug if they lose this game, as Bengals fans try to digest whatever happens on Sunday. You need to send an email to me, pdaner@theathletic.com, with Growler in the subject header somewhere. Or you can tweet at us, as long as you use the hashtag Bengals Growler Bet hashtag on Twitter, with an answer to this week's Growler Bet question. Jay, what are we doing?
All right. I mean, it's the question. What time will the Bengals get their first touchdown? And we're going to give you, what did we say, a 4-second
buffer?
Five seconds
in either direction.
Oh, you're all getting beer. So I'm going to stick with my optimistic outlook. I do think they're going to, I'm with you. I think if they lose a toss, you know they're going to get the ball first. If they win, I think they might take it. I think they're going to break the schneid, go down. I don't know if they're going to go tempo or not. I'd like to see it. But I think this is the week. I always say never bet against the trend, but I'm going to bet against the trend. I'm going to get a quick touchdown. I'm going to go 11-11 first quarter.
Wow. Very optimistic, rosy view. Taking the ball, going down. 19-play drive again? Is it going to take 19 plays?
You can't do 19 plays in 3 minutes and 49 seconds.
I'm not going to have that optimistic view. I think it's going to be more slow start a little bit. Maybe they kick a field goal probably in one of those early two couple drives. But I'm going to say 6:52 in the second quarter. First touchdown for the Bengals on this one. Offensive touchdown, should we specify?
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's make it offensive
just in
touchdown.
Just in case. We're going to specify offensive. So I'm saying 6:52, second quarter, first offensive touchdown. Again, P. Daner at The Athletic or hashtag Bengals Growler Bet to either of us on Twitter. All right. Jay, before we do our predictions, do you have any Arby's for me?
One quick one. We talked about Lou with his terse response yesterday. I thought T. Higgins had a really interesting one too, because everybody's had the same kind of everything's fine, don't panic, no urgency. And you haven't seen, it wasn't a snap, but it was very un-T. Higgins. Like, I can't remember who it was, but somebody started asking him a question about comparison to this year and last year. And he said, hey, well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to keep it real. I don't want to talk about last year. Last year was last year. This year is this year. You know what I'm saying? And he just shut it down right there. And that was, I like that response. It almost felt like you needed to hear one or two of those. It was all, everything's going to be fine. Everything was optimistic, confident, no panic, all that. It was good to hear one player and one coach get a little feisty yesterday to let it know that it's not stuck in their craw, but there's some definite frustration there and some definite wanting to get things right and tired of talking about how bad things are.
And the understanding that it's got to stop being about last year. It's not about last year anymore. And it should be noted along that line. T is one of the kindest, like soft-hearted teddy bear type guys that you'll come across in this locker room. Just a really nice, nice young man, you know? And so that tone was notable from him, because he's such a soft soul. You know what I mean? That it was, that it was notable to hear that from him. And it wasn't meant in any sort of like anger or mean. It was just kind of like, this is an important point I need to make.
Yeah.
You know, that we got to be done with last year. I'm done with last year. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And I'm glad you brought that up. That was a really good point to say. I wanted to bring up just something that I found funny. I snuck this into my story, so I'm kind of cheating a little bit. But I couldn't help asking DJ Reader when was the last time he was standing up on a football field with the ball in his hands. And his eyes lit up and he just said, I was so excited. He's like, I am so happy someone tackled me before I did something dumb. Because he was thinking about – he's like, I was thinking about doing something dumb. Like, I was thinking about, I'm going to go score. It's time to score. And if you notice, he takes a couple steps before he gets hit from behind on the strip that Von Bell had in Dallas. And, you know, you don't think these guys – he said last time he probably had the ball in his hand standing on a football field was maybe in high school. Hmm. You know, he say he almost had one at Clemson, but you don't think these big boys don't think about it all the time? He recited every single detail of the time Vic Beasley stole a potential touchdown from him at Clemson, where he was going to scoop it up and score. He's like, I'm going to scoop it up. I'm going to score. I'm going to take it in. And here comes Vic Beasley, the defensive end for Clemson. He just took it right in front of me and ran to the end zone for an easy 5-yard score. And now I'm just the guy who was behind Vic Beasley. He's like, you know, yeah, it sticks in their craw a little bit. It was a memorable moment, but he's told me before. He's like, I don't think people realize. I think I'm one of the best athletes on the team. I got moves. You know, you don't even want to see it. And so we were all about to see it. I think. I wish we would have seen more of it. So, but I enjoy. It's funny. Big man touchdown. I feel like big man talking about trying to score touchdowns could be, you know, something you could do every single week. I might actually try to do that. Just talk to every big man on the team about touching the ball and trying to score touchdowns.
I mean, it's not just standing up. He has never had the ball, and he had no fumble recoveries at Clemson. He's had none in the NFL, and so that was his first. I mean, it probably was, and maybe in high school he just saw the ball on the ground and pounced on it. Who knows when he?
I like to think that they were refrigerator parrying with
DJ. Oh yeah,
for the Whirlies at Grimsley High School. I might have to go check. Might have to call back to Grimsley and check on the stats on Reader's running game down there. All right, so that's our any related Bengals. What was it? I forget what our acronym is for now. Insight, Extras, and Stories, Arby's.
Yes.
Arby's segment. Prediction time.
I really, really am confident the Bengals are going to win this game. I would never in a million years lay the points. I think it's going to be tight. I'm going to go Bengals 24, Jets 20.
Okay. I don't understand how those two sentences mix for you, Jay. How can you never in a million years lay the points, but be very, very confident the Bengals are going to win?
Because I like money. I don't want to waste my money.
If you're that confident, why wouldn't you be willing to lay the points?
Well, because they only play 3-point games.
You're opening it up to the fact that they could definitely lose this game, which you should feel that way.
They only play 3-point games. They're going to win, but it'll be tight. Joe Burrow, they'll either fight. The defense will make a play at the end, or Joe Burrow will have a game-winning drive. I can't see him winning by more than 4.5. I can. I wouldn't risk anything on it.
Okay. Well, you kind of stole my thunder. Bengals 23, Jets 20. They only play 3-point games. I do think this game will be close. I am not confident about them winning it. But I'm with you. I think they're too good. There's too much talent on this team. Joe Burrow is too good of a leader. Their leadership on defense and across the team is too good for them to not right the ship a little bit and be able to go beat Joe Flacco and the Jets. I just – as much as I – think that there is some red flag nature to the first 2 weeks without question, and you can start wondering about the big picture of this team. I just think they're too good to lose in this spot. So I have Bengals 23, Jets 20 in the latest 3-point game. So all right, that will wrap us up. We of course will be back with the walkout on Sunday, so make sure you listen to that. Jay is on the New York trip, and I'm on the homestead this week as we plod through the season here. So we'll have that for you. And all our stuff is up on The Athletic. Our Burrow book is out. Go to triumphbooks.com/Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, The Rise of Joey Franchise, a compilation of all our stories at The Athletic about the rise of Joe Burrow, including the excellent work from Brody Miller back at LSU, John Greenberg and Zach Jackson on his history and his pop culture and all of our work that we've done over the course of the last few years. Some new stuff in there too. Highly recommend it if you're looking to give gifts early Christmas. Just want to be that cool dude who has the Athletics book in your man cave. Give it a shot. Triumphbooks.com/Joe Burrow. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. We will talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.